Coming up on this week's Redcast.
That's what's so hard about this. What does this law mean? Depends on your business and your risk appetite. The benefit is ultimately to the efficiency of the organization. And it's down in the policies and the procedures and those controls. Do you want to lower your cost of compliance? It's not by stopping the fines. It's by being more efficient so you don't need so many compliance people watching all the front line.
It helps to organize processes and tools, workflow-based, and to follow them. This is important to follow them in a structured way with a clever meter model and on the basis of very, very good underlying data. What is not documented does not exist. So you need a documentation of everything you are doing.
You make the document the payload that then has a manifest on it, right? It's like a shipping container. You want to know, well, what's in that thing and who do I route it to? People thinking about it as magic AI are really at a loss. I mean, we've seen some horror stories out there with just people thinking they can throw AI at a problem and determine a document is relevant. Trick is not to create lots of clunky spreadsheets and, you know, pretty diagrams that don't connect to the data. You know, you have to keep it data-led, and that data's got to get there quick.
Welcome to Redcast.
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 Shining a light on challenges and opportunities for digital compliance.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. PJ DiGiammarino, CEO and founder of JWG, and I'm really pleased to bring you Season 2, Episode 17, about digitizing the regulatory horizon. I'm really pleased to be kicking off this discussion right now about what is it taking to manage compliance and what kind of new RegTech tooling is coming in that space. I thought, who better than Rachel Walcott to help us with this? And I've asked her to sit in the chair for this discussion so I can step back and participate. Rachel, why don't you just give everyone a quick introduction and then we'll go around the horn.
Okay, great. I'm Rachel Walcott. I'm a senior editor at Thomson Reuters Regulatory Intelligence. I've been covering this subject area for quite a while, maybe 11 years. And been concentrating on RegTech developments as well as a lot in terms of enforcement action and risk management failings.
Fantastic, David.
So I'm a compliance and risk at bank veteran. I've been at lots of the big banks and worked in risk and compliance functions. And I'm out being an independent consultant because I've kind of had enough of it all. I'm writing a book about financial industry compliance. And if you want to see my hot takes, I've got my LinkedIn where I'm posting because I can't figure out the internet.
We'll put that in the show notes for people who can't figure out Google.
So hi, I'm Avia. I'm working for PwC in Germany for more than 15 years. I'm advising banks in dealing with regulatory issues, being compliant with all the new regulations coming up. And I'm also responsible for a tool we developed at PwC that helps banks and financial institutions to deal with this regulatory tsunami.
PJ, what about you?
Well, Rachel, thank you for that. I founded a think tank that helps the industry come together 16 years ago, but 10 years ago, we started experimenting with RegTech ourselves. And we figured since we were out talking about it, we better try doing it as well. And today we deliver global horizon scanning across hundreds of regulations and thousands of websites and help our clients figure out how to manage the information flow better, faster, cheaper, and more safely. So we're looking forward to getting into some of that with you today.
Excellent. Okay. Well, my little preamble is going to be that we've had a lot of enforcement action globally, I'd say, over the last 18 months to 2 years. I mean, this is the most recent kind of batch that's not directly related to the 2008 financial crisis, but it's showing that firms are failing to manage risk and compliance across their unwieldy organizations. In the US, the OCC has even gone as far as to order firms to revamp their entire risk management and compliance frameworks. And the Bank of England recently commented in a Dear CEO letter about Archegos Capital Management's implosion, that lessons of the 2008 financial crisis have not been learned by banks, and that they haven't made enough changes to manage risk effectively. So I think those are both pretty big statements, and they come as we're seeing reg change continue, and in certain jurisdictions become faster and more complex. So in the UK, we have the government, if it lasts, desiring to sunset all retained EU law by the end of 2023. That includes financial services. So the bank, the PRA, and the Financial Conduct Authority are busily rewriting rule books. So what we're going to talk about today is how firms can use digital tools for horizon scanning, like PJ mentioned, to shape internal policies, which can be then shared and applied consistently, efficiently, and accurately, but also talk about what have been some of the barriers to adoption. Like, why aren't banks using this more effectively? Okay, so David, what parts of the rules through controls chain are broken now?
So, based on what you were saying, I'm thinking about this an awful lot because I've seen a lot of these projects spin up and fail and restart and restart and restart. And I've seen firms spend literally hundreds of millions of dollars trying to solve this. And I think it's a belief that the chain starts with the regulation, and that what the regulators, with all the fines and all the news releases, and that's where the heat and light is, I suppose, that people are focused on that, when that's not really why we should be trying to comply and why there's benefit. The benefit is ultimately to the efficiency of the organization. And it's down in the policies and the procedures and those controls. It's the activities that need to be adjusted by trying to comply. And what I've seen in every single one of these projects is everyone leaves that to the end. They say, let me go get a library of regs. Let me go find that. Let me go and try it, then connect it to my policies and procedures. And they start to connect it and they go, oh, well, these aren't really where I can find them. They're kind of all over here. Let's change how we want to structure our laws. Rather than saying, we really just need to fix our procedure library. And especially at the larger institutions, I see the political challenge of that. You're crossing every line of business. You're forcing people to do something that is cleaning their room that they really don't want to do and is really a cost. And it's borne not by the compliance organization, which can sort of compartmentalize the cost of regulatory compliance, or the risk organization. It's borne by the frontline business. And that's what compliance organizations are supposed to prevent. That's why they exist, is to prevent that burden on the frontline as they go and make money. So these projects wash up against poorly organized procedures. People try to tag them in, they try to taxonomize them, they try to link everything, it falls apart, and then they cycle again. If they get far enough to get the regulatory burden and analysis lifted off them at that second, that system ossifies, and then you can come back in 2, 3, 5, 10 years later and be the heroes to replace that system, whatever its code name, with your new code name, and face the same problems. I have seen very few institutions take the "we need to operate better" as the lesson. And I think when you talk about Archegos and you look at Credit Suisse and you read the findings on how that thing fell apart, they had all the stuff in place as the processes. They just went, oh, looks like we'll make some money, so we'll just ignore that. So I think it's really about, you want to operate better because you want to lower your cost of compliance. You want to lower your cost of compliance. It's not by stopping the fines. It's by being more efficient, so you don't need so many compliance people watching all the front line.
Yeah, sort of embedding in a compliance culture on top of everything else, which is sort of the human aspect to the whole technology thing. I've always wondered, maybe this is something we can talk about some other time or a little later, you know, how the technology can enable you know, the first line of defense to do the right thing and maybe get them to pause and think. Yeah, you know, maybe I shouldn't be just okaying $1 billion worth more of credit to, you know, a certain hedge fund client today without them giving me any real information about what they're doing or what their positions might be, or just circumventing that.
Yeah, let me add just one thing based on what you said. I'm sorry. But with the technology aspect, what I see wrong on the or the opportunity, there's nothing wrong. It's just opportunities. The opportunity on the technology front, and for people like PwC, and is to focus on what is the business value. I see these projects spun up and the customers viewed as compliance, and they say they go as far as what compliance might need, but they never go all the way to the business. And that's always left for later. But that would embed it really and allow for a set of tech requirements that make the business's task easier in compliance, which would make it stick, I think, better.
Yeah, getting some more buy-in. So Rabia, what are firms seeing in terms of RegTech opportunity now? You're on mute.
At first, I have to say I agree with everything that David just mentioned. Because I think in the area of tension between the scarce human resources, increasingly complex regulation, increasing compliance costs, et cetera, and the regulation which continues to be published in large numbers, you must think about new ways to deal with the regulatory requirements to make this more, as David already said, more efficiently and effectively. And of course, it makes sense to use new technologies in this background. Artificial intelligence, for example, is no longer just a buzzword, but it's now a more or less tried and tested and increasingly successful technology to generate meaningful results with a large amount of data. And not only can the existing problems of a lack of human resource be counteracted by automating parts of the risk management process, and allowing the staff to turn to more demanding tasks or to tasks that makes more money and that are generating a greater added value in which way ever. But new interesting insights can also be generated by using new technology. For example, AI gives us the opportunity to automatically search for processes, policies, or controls that need to be adjusted. By being able to identify new content in regulatory documents by just comparing it with the previous version, definitely. But at the same time, searching in the existing documentation of the risk management framework and finding out points where the new requirements should take effect in the future, you can have a huge added value at this point. And without using your scarce personal resources for this, when we are currently quite successful with various proofs of concepts on this topic. But even without the use of the latest technologies like AI or things like this, in my experience, it helps to organize processes and tools, workflow-based, and to follow them. This is important, to follow them in a structured way. With a clever meta model and on the basis of very, very good underlying data. For example, driving regulatory change based on an excellent regulatory radar with the right workflow a good way of documenting the results. This can lead to transparent risk management of compliance relevant regulations at all times. Process, policies, and controls included, and as well as a meaningful reporting for all the different levels in an organization. I think this is also often a huge problem that all the lacks of a proper compliance management will not be reported at the right levels, for example.
Yeah. I think that definitely is something that happens. And I read time and again that, you know, on various enforcement notices or regulatory commentary that senior managers or the board don't really have this information about what's actually happening. Or in some instances, they call it a lack of interest. So PJ, what is the state of the RegTech market? What's going on? What's different now than it was when you started this project 10 years ago or 11 years ago?
I guess the good thing and the bad thing is that there's a lot more noise. You know, so even from the regulatory point of view, you know, by the time we finish this podcast, we'll have had 30 different alerts we need to go check from the global regulatory publication machine. There literally is a machine, but it's not always productive noise. And I think that gets to the challenge we all have now, which is these conversations are tricky. They differ by jurisdiction. For large organizations, you've got to get a lot of people aligned. And the only way you can do that is through really solid, good process like Rebea was talking about, but also then leveraging insight in a data-driven way. And that's the big insight I think we've brought to the table is how do you build an ontology that says this is what the regulators are talking about in this document? And you make the document the payload that then has a manifest on it, right? It's like a shipping container. You want to know, well, what's in that thing and who do I route it to? As soon as you know that, then you can figure out who in the board should pay attention to it. Because the problem at the moment is it's just so much and there's so much noise, you can't really drill that down to any meaningful level. And that's preventing a lot of good collaboration. And that's one of the reasons we got into this space. So, hey, we can actually help figure out how do you open that up? How do you open the conversation to the right actors across the organization or even across organizations? And that's the other piece that's still not happening, and I'd love to hear David's thoughts on it. But you know, we spent a number of years talking about the great utility that would really help everyone understand what were the new things regulators wanted people to do. And it's never been built. Very few have even been brave enough to try. I'm glad to say we at least, you know, had a conversation or two about it. But you know, there's a very unnatural act for compliance and legal people to want to share their insight around the space. And it takes an awful lot of work to pull that out. So I think that's after a decade, at least we're having that conversation, but there's a long way to go.
I think my soundbite on that is my frequent hot take is if you want to innovate, you don't start with legal and compliance people. It's very hard for them to think about what technology can do, but it's very easy for them based on their training and experience to think about what can go terribly, terribly wrong. And the idea of sharing and the risk of we have offered legal advice to some other bank who is now going to sue us, or will be implicated when they get in trouble with a regulator. As you said, PJ, we had talked way back when, and we'd gotten very close with a whole bunch of major international banks trying to form a regulatory utility. And what ultimately shut it down was everybody was willing to be third in line. Mm-hmm. Nobody wanted to be first. Being second was kind of dodgy, but all the compliance people, and the operations people, and mainly the risk people were like, yeah, let's go do that. But as soon as you got to legal and some of the compliance people, they would say the risk is too high. We need to clean our own house. And while it might benefit us all, the risk of litigation here and being held accountable for offering an opinion on what this law means, because that's what it comes down to. That's what's so hard about this. What does this law mean? Depends on your business and your risk appetite. There are two different definitions of a business day in the CFPB regulations in the US. And forget about everybody else. That's just one regulator. So even just defining this is the day we were 3 days. We got to file something in 3 days. What was 3 days? Does it include this day? And they're afraid to make that recommendation because there are plenty of lawsuits.
Mm-hmm. Well, to your point, David, about cleaning house, doesn't seem to be a lot of house cleaning that's occurred. You did an article recently on LinkedIn showing that fines don't really have an impact on share price, which we were saying is a bit crazy considering a lot of these are for poor risk management, which would show you as an investor that this is probably not a great stock to buy. I don't know. I mean, people have a lot of ideas about fines. They think that they don't really serve any purpose because they don't change behaviors. People don't care. People think there should be, you know, different kinds of punishments for banks. People talk about some of the non-financial things, like, you know, if the OCC tells you can't start taking any new business, or expand your business that has happened to Citi, that's happened to Wells. You get hauled up in front of the House of Representatives, Maxine Waters, and she gives you a good old ticking off. So what do you think is going on here?
I think we have the technology solutions. I think what PJ or Bay have talked about, these are amazing solutions and they're available and people spend money, but they spend money while the heat is on and then they stop, which means that you never quite get anything put in place. And I think fines serve the useful purpose of funding regulators. And that's a useful purpose. It's knowing that you have the cop there slows some of the speeders down. But I would wonder if any of us, I know I have never done it, have ever changed our bank because of the fines and settlements that bank has been under. Nobody picks their bank on that. They always look at, well, this is the nearest bank. I'm going to open my branch and I'll stay here for the rest of my life. And I think you hit it. It needs to be about business. And the main driver right now, I think, that leads to the building of the processes is the cost of the compliance function. So as PJ talked about, all these regs come in and you have these waves of people trying to solve them. So the first approach is let's try and put some technology, which is a good approach to make this better, but it's running up against the technology needs to go all the way through. And to get that all the way through, the business needs to feel the cost of compliance, not just as a fine, not just as an amorphous check of some percentage of their balance of their income statement goes to the compliance department, because it doesn't get allocated based on how bad you've been. It gets allocated just evenly across the company. The things that I've always seen in the meetings that cause executives to move are, remember, we can't add any new businesses at Citi. We can't buy any new businesses. Remember, we're under the asset cap. Remember, we can't open these kind of mortgages. That gets the attention and holds it because it's a business problem now. And I think that it's hard for the regulators to do that, but I think that would change things.
Yeah, and in the meanwhile, it seems like during the cleanup process, they find a bunch of other stuff that was also wrong. You know, some of these are really long-term projects, you know, undoing or unwinding a lot of the misconduct and taking that out of the business. I would also like to put in a call for, you know, realignment of incentives. That comes up a lot as well. It's something that comes up in some of the money laundering enforcement actions, saying that people are incentivized to take risks on new clients, and because that's how their bonus is going to get paid. So I think that's something that people need to be more realistic about what drives some of this misconduct, and how there is a difference between doing business and doing business the right way. And yes, incentives can cause undesirable behavior. I think everybody needs to admit that. Okay, that's my little hobby horse right there. So, Rabia, what do regulators think about this technology? Are they open to it?
I do think that regulators are open to it, because it helps not only our clients, so from a PwC perspective, to work properly with all this regulatory, new regulatory topics. It also helps the regulators, because our clients are better able to show how they're dealing with all the new requirements. So I work in Germany. We here have the special feature that risk management and also compliance management is part of the annual audit. Yeah? So I think it's a little bit unique in the EU. And so we and the clients are advised, we are very experienced in demonstrating to regulators how well we meet all the different requirements and how fine our processes to comply with all new regulations coming up works. But of course, for a regulator, it's always very important. What is not documented does not exist. So you need a documentation of everything you are doing. For example, the implementation of a new control, adjustment of a policy due to a new regulation or whatever. So this point is very worth mentioning because there's very often a lack of documentation. And documentation also is a very, very huge cost factor. Yeah. And on the basis of new technologies, the documentation can, of course, also be a self-runner. Yeah, so this is something that you have to think about. Also our regulators, so from my point of view, already understood this, so that we need new technology, that this helps to install very secure processes that leads to a very good documentation, which is not only of advantage for the company itself, but also for the regulators.
Yeah, that's something we hear a lot too, which is, you know, to what extent can you help us prove what we did? Because we may have made a bunch of decisions, but they're on email or they're stuck in a PowerPoint or whatever. And you really, these solutions need to help the humans work out what they think and then document it. And people thinking about it as magic AI are really at a loss. I mean, we've seen some horror stories out there with just people thinking they can throw AI at a problem and determine a document is relevant. Well, how does it know? You know, if it's a new topic, it's never heard of, you know, or this is what it means for that business. Well, how does it know what that business is and what this rule would be? And there's all those basic problems. And I guess what we're finding as well is that the way the biggest firms are starting to manage this is by getting to model-based controls. So they have their own internal language for how do they think about trading. And what you're trying to do is map the way regulators talk about that trading to the report requirement. You know, so you ultimately then streamline, here's a big complex set of discussions. What does it mean about what I put in the, you know, date stamp in that particular field in that country? You know, so just have to try to streamline it all the way to the point of control and make sure that you've got all the interdependent conversations out of the way, especially around AI. Because there are AI rules that say you can't do certain things, even with your regulatory processing. So we all have to be cognizant of the kind of digital age we're in.
Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting you mentioned that, PJ. You can see how a failure in one process, the one compliance process, can have knock-on effects to other compliance processes where you might not think there would be. So last week, we saw MarketWatch 70 from the Financial Conduct Authority, and they were complaining again about firms not putting accurate like national identification codes for individual traders. And they were saying that part of this was to do with poor client onboarding, that you were not getting the right information that you needed for the MiFID II transaction reporting when you were onboarding a client. And they were even talking about online trades. And this can have all kinds of knock-on effects all over the place. So I guess that's the other thing. You need to make sure that you see these connections between KYC and what your needs are to fill in that box on the transaction report. Those things, I guess the MiFID II transaction reporting has been around for a while. This has got to be like the third or fourth warning that the Financial Conduct Authority put out about it. People are still struggling to, you know, fill in the blanks. PJ, what about putting in a horizon scanning tool at your firm? How does that work, and how can you do that properly so you can be ensured what you're getting alert about is what actually matters, and it's alerting you on the correct things, and you're not just making an assumption that because the computer said this is something you need to be worried about, that that's actually true? Because like you said, there are loads and loads of alerts that come out every day, especially, you know, in this world of sanctions, your computer is pinging all the time.
Yeah, and it all gets down to, you know, having a plan and having a very structured way to talk about what's relevant. And, you know, in both those fronts, you know, it's entirely possible to go inspect all the regulatory plans because they're all public information and then say, this is what we think we might be dealing with. But then you need to work that into the workflow. So you need to say, okay, I'm looking for things that talk about this kind of a reporting problem, or I'm looking just for generally, you know, where I have to send reports to regulators because this group is the one responsible for that. And so it's dialing into, it's this document type from those kind of regulators goes to this kind of individual, and they get an alert, and there's a workflow and governance around how do they manage that conversation. But the trick is not to create lots of clunky spreadsheets and, you know, pretty diagrams that don't connect to the data. You know, you have to keep it data led, and that data's got to get there quick. So you need to make sure that, you know, you've got a robust enough process to be able to say, this is how we're going to think about the filtering and the workflow. And then this is where, you know, we have our checkpoints and our controls over how we're ingesting things in from the horizon. And there always will be the unknown unknowns. So you have to account for those as well. But, you know, 90% plus can be very well known if you put the time in front up front to think about it.
Now, just to go back to this workflow point and KYC, it's something that what I've been hearing is that firms haven't been putting enough workflow around, or automated workflow around KYC, ongoing due diligence of high risk clients and things like that. And basically they keep a list of high risk clients or whatever in a spreadsheet. And I guess just hope that somebody checks up on it and sees what's going on. That's something that's come up in some of the enforcement notices on money laundering failures. So just to wrap up, what are we going to be talking about next month at this conference that you're doing, PJ? What are people going to be learning about?
So the theme this year, it's our seventh annual conference, and this is our second virtually. We're really pleased to have such a, you know, a great cast, including the folks here. But we're going to be talking about digitally native controls. And what does it take to think about, you know, how you can take all of the complex decision-making we've been talking about here and get that baked into the way the business looks at doing business with the client. Because I think I'm 100% aligned with David. If we can get aligned with the business on what they do for compliance up front, we take a lot of the noise out of the system. And the reason we got to this was because digital assets got really hot this year. And when you talk to digital asset folks, they cannot believe all the things that we do in TradFi to be able to then put spreadsheets and controls in place that, you know, in their mind ought to be just getting the SDK and getting the format and serving the data in and off you go. So I think that we're taking that kind of mindset. What I would really like to, you know, get out of all these all-stars is how should you think about managing the plethora of different themes that you've got, and, you know, come understand what that means for your organization. So, you know, JWG is getting all kinds of awards in this space now. We're just starting to get out and talk about them. But, you know, we've got a news and networking collaboration site award. We've got Reg Delta awards. We've got solution provider awards. You know, we're trying to get all the best and the brightest in reg tech together to really have that broader conversation. And that's what we're really excited about this year.
I'm going to keep thinking about these things. I am working on my own little compliance manifesto about what are the series of things we can do to make this better and drive it. And I've just hearing what Rebea said there about how firms in Europe or in Germany, at least, are audited on risk. I think an audit approach here, standards would make a big difference. And I'm going to be thinking a lot in the next month before the meeting about what kind of standards, because without standards, it's hard for people to design systems, and it's hard for people to say, what do we want to do to show that we're complying?
Yeah, and I just to give ORX a plug, the Operational Risk Exchange crew will be with us at the conference. They've invested a ton of time and effort and even gotten a big name consultant in to help them with operational risk controls, which then can, you know, really, if you start thinking about it, maybe one of the missing pieces of the jigsaw here. So I'm looking forward to that.
Great. Well, we'll see you all on the 9th and 10th of November.
Thank you very much for taking the chair, Rachel. Thank you very much to David and Rabea for plugging me in today. And we look forward to seeing you all again soon. If you like what you heard today, please rate and review us on whatever podcast platform you found us. It helps others figure out how to plug in as well.
You can download the podcast via Spotify, Apple, and Google. But also, I'd encourage people to come to the JWG website, which, as hopefully you will know, is jwg-it.eu. Go to the Intelligence Hub and create your bespoke library.
This is Redcar.
Shining a light on challenges and opportunities for digital compliance.